What's up, monster kids? You staying up way too late watching Bela Lugosi and Vincent Price on TV? Well, I've got the podcast for you. Cobwebs, a gothic cinema podcast in which I, Daniel Epler, and a rotating panel of guests dive into the history of the gothic horror genre and its influence on cinema today.
Now, before the party begins, let's go over the details.
I'm talking Hammer Horror, Universal Monsters, Edgar Allan Poe, and even the modern stuff that draws inspiration from those.
There are dark corners. Horror's almost impossible to imagine.
So if you've always felt you'd be a little more at home in a Transylvanian castle with the vampires in the crypt, then head to cobwebspodcast.com or check us out on major podcasting platforms. Cobwebs, a gothic cinema podcast guaranteed to give you the spooks.
Welcome to another new episode of the Dead Ringers podcast, live from Fantastic Fest 2019. My name is Noel McBride, and I am joined by our Fantastic Fest 2019 crew, which is Kat Adams, Emily Von Zela, and Paul Farrell. We're just going to get right into it. So, day four.
We actually had like a pretty unified sort of schedule for early on, because we got to see the Horror Queers live panel, which was awesome.
That was so fun.
It was very cool.
Yeah. I feel like really, like, you can just kind of discuss that in conjunction with what we saw after, which is Scream Queen, My Nightmare on Elm Street, which is a documentary about Mark Patton. And they had Mark Patton and Robert Ressler and, what's her name, Carrie Myers?
Kim Myers.
At the podcast, too. So, like, between the two of those, it was just, like, a really cool... It's just like hearing Mark's story and like what he's trying to do with these projects was really good. Like, it was really emotional, but like, I don't know like how to, you know, put it into better words than that.
It was inspirational. He took something that was pretty unfair and wrecked his chances at Hollywood during a time that was already really difficult for him, and now he's using it to advocate for LGBTQ issues.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I really appreciated the way they set everything that he was going through on Nightmare on Elm Street against everything that was happening in Hollywood at the time, because we forget just how terrible that period in history was for the LGBT community with the AIDS crisis and everything that was blowing up around that. So having that contextual detail, I think, really played into his story.
Yeah, this speaks to my ignorance, but I don't think I knew about the mandatory drug tests they made people do so you could be on network television, because AIDS was so scary and no one knew how it worked. And frankly, people were looking for a reason to stigmatize gay people anyway. So they thought it could be passed through kissing or just contact of any sort. So yeah, people had to do mandatory blood tests, and it's pretty scary.
Yeah.
Yeah, hearing a candid conversation that was sort of uncontrolled, meaning like off the cuff, you know, before the documentary was really nice, because then when you go into the more controlled version of the story, like the edited version,
yeah,
I felt like a lot of the gaps that I might have felt like were visible in the film were sort of filled in ahead of time.
Yeah.
And so that, I, you know, like you said, made the watching the movie all the more satisfying, because like I appreciated that the podcast, you know, it had to evolve. Like, you know, initially, like, they kind of started talking, you know, about the movie and joking around, and they had to kind of adapt to what Mark wanted to do, which was not really joke quite as much.
They said like he sort of like changed it, like threw them a curveball as far as like what he wanted to do with it.
I thought Trace and Joe like really handled it with like grace and charm, and like just adapted to what their guests wanted to talk about, but still maintained like the structure of their show. And it's the first live podcast I've ever been to personally.
Yeah.
So it was a cool experience. And I thought it.
And if you ever do plan to watch Scream Queen, track down that Horror Queers podcast, because the film puts a little too, it ends a little too neatly.
It puts a bow on it.
Yeah, it doesn't feel true to life, and hearing Mark Patton talk about it, maybe not 100% true to his experience. Even though I was talking to some of his assistants afterwards, and evidently he has had ongoing conversations with some of those people, but
interesting.
Not the writer, but the director.
Okay.
if it feels a little too neat, or like maybe they're asking the queer figure in the story to pick up the slack for everyone, you need to hear Mark Patton talk about it himself.
Yeah.
Plus, and just listening to him talk a little more informally and kind of off the cuff, it's more fun. Like, he's a great persona in the film, but he's speaking very directly, and he's a lot more serious. Watching him on stage with his co-stars and just kind of having fun with it.
Like, nice to have a real affection for
each other. Yeah, like him and Robert Ressler,
Yeah, which that was touching and good to see them supporting him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I feel like Robert Ressler feels like one of those, like, 80s archetypal guys. And so, like, to see him fully embrace, like, he was talking about, like, all the men that have come up to him, like, you were my first crush. And he's like, I hug them every time. Mm-hmm. Like he has no, like, I don't know, just seeing that he's obviously, like, not insecure about it at all. Like, mm-hmm. It doesn't, make him, like, some actors might not be comfortable with that. But like,
especially from his generation.
I guess even more like it. Yeah. So it was really heartening to see that. It was really good. And then after that we had Synchronic. Is that next?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
It is. Right? Synchronic. It was
Synchronic.
My time's all out of whack because I was taking too much Synchronic.
Yeah, we've been inundated with time travel this trip.
Which, when I heard the title for the first time, you just kind of can't not hear the Chronic part and, like, joke about it. And then the fact that, like, I didn't know this going in, but that it was, like, a time travel via drug thing. I was like, okay, cool, I'm into this. what'd you guys think of that? Synchronic.
I really liked
really
it.
Really good.
Yeah.
I think we've said it multiple times. I think we all pretty much agree too. Like, it's not our favorite Benson and Moorhead, but that's like the least. What was your amazing phrase earlier?
It's praising with faint damnation.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it may be like the lowest ranked of their movies, but they've made four amazing movies, so it's hard to do that. And as like Kat, I think you said elsewhere, like one of the main things is just that it's less character driven than their stuff is usually.
More plot driven, and the themes they're tackling don't seem quite as vast. They seem a little more concrete and familiar. So they're not going after the abstractions in the way they usually do, which I think also made it seem just a little less special than their other work. But again, it's great. The cast is great, and the production value's good. It's a great concept, and we saw them at the Q&A afterwards, and they were talking about, when they're discussing their ideas and they talk about what really frightens them, it always comes back to the actual mysteries of the universe and science and what it means, its ramifications, and that's very much on display here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of dug that the movie sort of opens with Anthony Mackie's character, like, quoting Einstein and grounding the movie. Like, the movie approaches time travel in probably, like, one of the more, like, real... It's hard to say
It's grounded.
It feels more, like, realistic than most time travel movies, and it feels like they're really trying to create, a situation that would be, like, believable, like, to the audience.
Yeah.
And not, like, venturing into some kind of crazy, like, there's no flux capacitor in this one.
Well, that's
right. It's very chaotic and uncontrolled.
Correct, yeah.
It really does seem to treat time, as just... another dimension that we perceive one way but exists another, and
and it's grounded in math and theory and science rather than time travel, this wacky thing.
It's grounded in the fun parts of theory.
And as we learned in the Q&A, Justin Benson was a lot like the characters at the beginning. He's saying he did actually go, or he was about to go to med school, so like someone had asked him about whether there was like any reality to like the theories, and like he, like, again, it's not like he knows time travel, but like he did take like
some physics classes and stuff. So, like, it is rooted, yeah. Like we were saying, it's grounded in something which, like, a lot of time travel is very happy to be like, nah, we're just going to, like, use magic, basically.
Yeah.
So, like it was nice to see, yeah.
Something. Even though it was a little strange. They're like, so, basically, the drug pulls you atom by atom into another timeline. I'm like, nah. Okay. Yeah. Like, but that was the only time when you were like, you know what? If that's just what I have to swallow to go along with this, I'll do it. That's fine. I can go on that ride.
Yeah.
I'm really glad he wound up not going to med school because everything would suck for us now.
Right?
Yes. And actually, you know how they met? Like, they were Ridley Scott's production assistants.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And then, like, so it's just like, what the hell? I told Kathy, so, like, it's not fair that they're amazing directors. Justin's an amazing writer. They are actually pretty decent actors. And then they're just, like, handsome as fuck. It's like, you guys can't have all of these things.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's not fair.
Yeah, we can sit here and imagine something bad to make us, like, maybe they have really bad credit scores.
Oh, yeah.
Or, like, I don't know. They can't change a flat. Something's there. We know something's there.
Deep, that's buried.
They're not good at birthday gifts.
Oh, I bet they're terrible at birthday gifts.
I bet they're amazing at birthday gifts. I don't even know that
thing. I bet they're good at gifts. Yeah, I mean, they're so caring and understanding.
And we talked about it a little bit. One thing I thought maybe also that contributed to, like, the less personal stuff is that, like, their previous stuff was so, like, I mean, I always lumped all of it in horror, but, like, The Endless and Resolution both are, like, horror sci-fi, but they're so, like, genre bending that it's, like, I mean, it's just, like, putting them in those categories for the sake of it. Whereas, like, this feels, like, more beholden to, like, hard sci-fi. I mean, it's not hard sci-fi, but, like, because it's time travel, there's, like,
more mainstream sci-fi, maybe.
Yeah, or, like, there's rules that you have to, like, abide, essentially. And so I think that maybe contributes to some of, like, the, like, confining of their usual voice. Yeah. Like, they have to abide by certain rules because otherwise people are like, time travel bullshit.
Right.
But, yeah.
They do some really interesting things with race.
Yeah.
We've talked about this other places, but none of us can think of another mainstream time travel movie with a black lead, and of course that would complicate things. They mentioned it in the Q&A that things that would be fun for Marty McFly wouldn't be fun for Anthony Mackie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that plays out in some really interesting ways and relevant ways, and it was nice because that's not what the movie was about.
Yeah,
but it just suggested these things could happen, you know. If we're just making stuff up, they could happen to anyone, and if they did, it would play out differently. So
right. Yeah. So maybe we should not always look at the past with this rose-colored pair of glasses.
Yeah.
Because, hey, like, it was pretty shitty.
Poor Anthony Mackie keeps getting dropped in, like, the most racist times in America, and you're just like,
There was a great line where he's had the first time he time travels, and he has this amazing encounter, and this one's not, there's no racial undertones at all, and he just comes back, and he's like, the past sucks! Like, it's very bad!
Yeah, like, it was kind of refreshing in this day and age where there's a lot of negativity floating around for obvious reasons, and to have a movie that was like, you know what, the present, not as bad as we might think it is.
There are some real benefits, yeah.
And I thought that was kind of a cool, like, moral, and I think that leads into, like you guys were saying, like, it's definitely, like, the most digestible movie they've made for, like, a regular audience.
Yes, I think you're right. Like,
and that will probably serve them well, like, and maybe lead to them being able to do some of the headier stuff. Because, you know, I agree with you. I think out of the ones they've made, it's probably my lowest ranked. But, like, that's still great. So
And then the last, Kat, did you have? No, you went home after that, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
So the last one we had that night was Come to Daddy, which is starred Elijah Wood. Directed by Ant Timpson, who I mostly only know because Elric from Shockwaves loves Ant Timpson.
It's okay.
It's about Elijah Wood traveling through time to find his father. And then it turns out he is his father. No, it's not about time travel. I'm sorry.
You're thinking of that Futurama episode.
Yeah. I am. Should we talk about Futurama? No, okay.
Let's talk about
Come
Futurama.
To Daddy. Yeah.
Elijah Wood's character gets a letter from his dad out of nowhere, who he hasn't seen since he was a kid, and he goes to visit him and is, like, sort of trying to repair this relationship. But his dad is played by Stephen McHattie I guess I can't say anything. His dad, played by Stephen McCaddy, is just like a drunk asshole who basically just hates his guts and just like calls him a pussy or like calls
him
like
a total dick.
Yeah, just a huge drunk dick, and it's just like
he's got raisin eyes.
That's what it was. Oh, there's a whole thing about raisin eyes in the movie. Though it is pretty funny. I told Kat this. I was like, poor, what is it about? Like, I feel like Elijah Wood, super well-respected, but in movies he always plays these, like, characters that are, like, I feel like his character in this is really similar to his character in Cooties, where he's, like, kind of a loser that, like, doesn't really get it. And so, like,
but really wants to pretend that he's not a loser.
That's actually a super good comparison.
Yeah. So, like, I loved the moment where he's, like, talking about his music career.
Oh, my God.
And then he's like, I know Elton John. And his dad challenges him on it. And he's like, okay, I don't know any of them.
Yeah.
So he's just kind of pathetic.
What a
strange person to claim you know.
I know.
Well, the legit pop stars of today were not registering for
Okay. Yeah.
Didn't he say, like, he's like, I'm pretty good laying down sick beats or something like that. Like, just like, but like without an ounce of,
yes.
You know.
At one point he's like, I count Kendrick Lamar and Chance the Rapper among my, like, best friends or something like that. It's just like, okay, Elijah.
Yeah, it was solid.
He's just, like, he's just playing a super kind of hipster idiot.
Yeah.
And then it goes off the rails.
So, I think it's a tough movie to talk about because we don't want to spoil it.
Yeah.
It is, it ventures into very intense, over-the-top exploitation. There are some very entertaining scenes and mm-hmm. very entertaining things it does. And I think had it gotten to that quicker and wrapped it up in a more satisfying way, this movie, I would be giving it like almost a glowing review. Because I think there's a great movie within what we saw. But as it is, I just don't think it comes together.
Yeah.
A lot of people liked it, and I'm happy about that, but it didn't work for me.
I will say, like, this is the way I kind of, like, phrased it, was like, I don't know that it, like, will stick with me. During the movie, though, I did find it really hilarious.
Yes.
Like, not just, like, the actual written jokes, but, like, there's a lot of, like, good physical comedy gags.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so, like, in that way, it's very entertaining. But, like, you were sort of saying, Paul, the part of the issue is, like, there's sort of, it almost needed to commit to one tone more than, like, trying to balance so many, because it still tries to be sort of a serious thing where he's, like, coming to terms with all of his base daddy issues, essentially. Mm. But then it's just, like, so funny all the other times that it's, like, it doesn't really... I don't really feel like we have much of an exploration of the emotions, but, like, the movie still puts a bunch of time into that.
Yeah.
So it's, like, maybe just lean more, like, full comedy.
Yeah.
Would have been better.
It's 100% worth watching if you're into exploitation movies, because it did have some of the funniest beats mm-hmm. of, like, any movie I saw.
Yeah.
Which is a shame that I don't love it, but you know, it, so I think if you like the ultra violent exploitation area and you're willing to give, you know, a pass to taking a while to get to that, you would probably enjoy Come to Daddy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
so, and it also has, and this is, I won't say who they are, but it has a couple other really good character actors in it, like Michael Smiley. Martin
Every
Donovan.
Time Michael Smiley shows up on screen, my voice inside my head just screams tires.
And he's really good in this, and just like a total weirdo. Again, like there's so much about the setup is really great. It just wishes the movie like kept you in more.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that's going to do it for day four from the festival. Want to remind everyone where they can find all of the co-hosts on the internet. Kat is at BureauKat, BureauKat. Emily is at Horrorella Blog. And Paul is at Paul is Great 2000. And now you can find me on Twitter at Nolan_McBride or the show's Twitter handle, which is at DeadRingersPod. You can find new episodes of Dead Ringers on iTunes, as well as Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, and TuneIn. If you like the podcast, please subscribe, rate, and consider leaving us a review. That definitely helps us get the word out and continue to grow the audience and then do fun things like this where we can get a bunch of us in one place and cover a big film festival. So keep spreading the good word. You can also find new and old episodes at deadringerspodcast.com. where you can also find a ton of written coverage from our boy Paul. He wrote reviews for, I would say, 75% of what he saw. So yeah, it's all up in there in his little sort of Fantastic Fest diaries. So we'll be back tomorrow with more coverage of the festival. As always, if you want to keep up to date on our happenings, our impressions at the festival and whatnot, definitely keep an eye on our Twitter feed. Thanks as always to Thomas Foster for our theme and Philip Yunt for our artwork and logo. Thanks to everybody who listens, who tunes in for every episode, shares the show online or, just comes and talks to us. We appreciate all of that and we love all of that. So yeah, keep doing what you're doing and thanks for continuing to support us. It means a lot. And as always, on behalf of my co-hosts, thanks for listening and stay spooky.